InvestTalk will begin in just a moment, made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And each month, Steve meets with a limited number of our listeners to review their retirement portfolios. Here's someone who offers some reflections on the process. Can I ask you, how did you think of your own portfolio at that point?
I would say my portfolio was a mess. It was more like a collection of leftovers. All I know is that it wasn't really growing, and I didn't know where to begin to fix it.
You can meet with Steve from anywhere in the USA via Skype or telephone. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then portfolio review. End of commercial, and now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, November 28th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and as always, we are here to help you become an above-average investor and not get too caught up in the noise and too caught up in the emotions of investing that can really steer people the wrong way. And we're here every weekday to help you bridge that gap, and that gap is between where you are today and where you want to be in the future, right? And we all want to be better investors in the future, including myself. You know, always learning, always trying to find ways to get a leg up even more than I do already. So today we're going to talk some about buying real estate, investing in real estate. When is a good time? What are the signs you should be investing in real estate? Maybe signs you shouldn't. Because it's not always just, oh, what is the market today? Certainly that's a large factor. But you individually, your own personal situation has to come into play as well when you're making that decision. So we're going to touch on that. Now, one of the biggest aspects of successfully managing risk is to diversify your portfolio, which means more about owning a couple dozen handful of stocks. You know, the same can be said for someone's entire asset base, right? You need to own different types of assets that encompass your net worth. You know, many people get enamored with a certain asset class based on usually recent performance, what they see as hot now, or what their friend said, or what, you know, what advice they're getting from their cousin or their uncle or whoever. And it's clear you don't have to go far back into the past to really understand how people can get in trouble. You know, the first tech bubble wasn't too long ago. Late 90s, certainly people got enamored with technology stocks. Then once again in the mid-2000s, real estate. Everyone got enamored with real estate. Right? And today, you know, I could say it's in the bond market. I could say it's tech stocks again. So this phenomenon of chasing performance and getting excited about a certain asset class just because it did well over the past 3 or 5 years is human nature. It really is. And you need to fight it. You know, because that human nature and that emotional tendency to chase what's hot, to, you know, a lot of the millennials call it FOMO, fear of missing out. Right? That is embedded into our DNA. Whether you're 90 or 9 years old, it doesn't matter. We're not that far evolved from the plains of, I don't say the plains of Africa, but the plains of anywhere in the world, right? Humans aren't far removed from the days when we were hunters and gatherers, and we lived in tribes. And if you think of how far we've come from there, from a civilized society point of view, it takes a lot longer than just a couple thousand years to develop our DNA and our natural instinct, right? So the reason we gravitate towards huge returns and media hype and the emotions of fear and greed is because that's what kept us alive on the plains of being hunters and gatherers, right? So that is the first step of understanding where that comes from and being able to overcome those drawbacks, those setbacks that are inherent in our DNA. Now, when considering how to invest your wealth over various asset classes, you need to consider many factors. One, do you have the expertise? Do you have the knowledge? You know, investing in, whether it's real estate, stocks, bonds, whatever it is, are you knowledgeable enough? Or are you just listening to one person? Are you getting a second opinion? Okay. Are you going at it blindly without knowing kind of the full picture? And a lot of people do that, and that's where they get in trouble. Second, is the level of risk you're willing to take reasonable for you, what you need? Now, there's bonds that a lot of people think are safe, but clearly recently we've seen they're not as safe as a lot of people think. You know, real estate's a little more risky than bonds. Then you move up the ladder into maybe large cap stocks, and then you move into small cap stocks, and then into emerging markets and foreign stocks, and you go up that risk ladder. And you have to understand why they're all more risky. Why does risk go up? What are the factors? The things that make real estate risky are not necessarily the things that make small cap stocks risky or emerging market stocks risky. Okay, so don't get caught up in the hype. Be fully knowledgeable. You're never going to know everything, but you need to understand the risks. That's why we talk about that so much. Because you can come up with a lot of different ways of why things could go well, but if you're blind to the handful of things why it could go wrong, all those positives don't mean much because you're not understanding your risks. And it's honestly a lot easier to figure out the risks than it is the positives, because the positives tend to be more be in higher numbers, higher number of reasons why a stock can go up, real estate prices could go up, bond prices could go up, etc. But it's pretty clear what the risks are for most asset classes, and that's why we discuss that so much. Now, having an eye on longer term trends is important. Being cognizant of where asset prices are now in context to where they have been in history. Because everything kind of reverts to the mean. Asset classes tend to act how they act over the long run. In the short run, things can get overblown to the upside into the downside. So where are you today in context to where things are in history? For example, real estate prices, they tend to go along with inflation prices over the long term. You know, that's why we were talking about here in 2005, 2004, 2006, that it wasn't sustainable. And it was a very simple reason. Asset prices or housing prices are going up 15 to 20% per year, and incomes were going up 2 to 3% a year. Well, how do you pay for real estate? With incomes. And so we had people calling up asking us, should I take equity out of this house and buy another investment property and just leverage myself to the hilt? And we kept saying no, because we knew that prices would revert to the mean. And that prices will go up along with incomes. And incomes would have to spike dramatically for those prices to make any sense. So that is why we kind of understood we didn't get caught up in the hype. And that's where we talk about is going back to the fundamentals, understanding asset price performance over the long term. Now let's open up the discussion now, and that includes you. I want to hear from you. As always, we're up for any money questions. Let's begin the Q&A session right now. We're going to go to our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. This is Manu from Fremont. I have a question regarding the dollar strength. Today it's 101.5, but I'm wondering how high it has been ever. So what impact it will have on commodities, let's say gold, where you see it going if the dollar index rises to the record level? Will it bounce from there or not? Thanks. Bye.
Will the dollar, I know the dollar has been higher in history, going back to 99. I don't have the exact chart in front of me. Let me try, I can try to look it up real quick. But I do think the dollar is about to reverse, to be frank. And I think that mainly there's too much bullishness. I think that everyone thinks that the Fed's going to be able to raise a lot of rates now because of the potential fiscal stimulus from Trump. But I think there's so much unknowns for Trump. What is he really going to to do? How much stimulus can he get? Can he get across? It's unknown, to be honest with you. So I don't want you to get too caught up in hype. Certainly, this will have a downward effect on commodity prices broadly. But then some commodity prices have skyrocketed dramatically. So I think this whole Trump trade right now, it's not a done deal that this is going to be great. I'm actually looking at the dollar chart now. It was high about 124 back in 85. So yes, it's been much higher than that. And I honestly don't think that this is a breakout in the dollar. Steve might disagree with me, but I don't. Because I don't think that the Fed can really raise rates too much, and I don't think that Trump is going to get across as much stimulus as he wants, and at least it's not going to happen next year. If anything, it's going to wait till 2018. And then if interest rates continue to go up, how is that going to affect the economy? You're already seeing mortgage rates at 4.2%. So I still don't think the dollar is truly going to break out here. But we'll see. I mean, it was down the day, and I do think we're going to reverse a lot of this Trump trade that happened recently. Now, how's your 401k doing? You're excited to say that our new program that's called My 401k helps solve the 401k selection problem that a lot of you have, and we believe this new system can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor. How to make informed choices within the limits of your employer's plan. So to find out more about it, just head to investtalk.com, click on the investments tab. Let's go to John in Santa Cruz. How you doing, John?
Fine, how are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
I have a question about two stocks, but if you only have time to answer for one, it would be Oak Tree Capital, OAK.
Okay. Let's see.
Mainly for income, and it would be a long-term hold, and I'll just be buying one position.
Okay, so this is Oak Tree Capital Group. It's an investment management company. Invests in distressed debt, corporate debt, control investing, convertible securities, real estate, and listed equities. So certainly, I would say on the high risk side, it's hard to argue really otherwise. And you go back just to, it did IPO back in 2012, right? And it's been declining kind of ever since. It rose dramatically for about a couple of years, and it's been declining ever since. Its high back in 2014 was about 60. Let's see, high was $62 and change. Now it's at $40.
Yeah.
So it's certainly in a downtrend.
Once again, it's a good buy.
Well, you know, it depends on what you think the future of the economy and that market is. Low interest rates helps this type of business. And if interest rates are going up, that's certainly going to be a headwind. I think it's a very high-risk play. It can afford its dividend now, but my worry is that it hasn't gone through this full cycle. So I would pass on it myself. 888-99 chart. This is Invest Talk. When to invest in real estate and when not to. That is our main discussion point for the day. I also have a few more, including what economic numbers are coming out this week, kind of giving you a broad overview of what are the positives, what are the negatives that could potentially be good and bad for the market, and what indicators are most important. So I'm going to get to that. And then the Italian referendum that's coming up Sunday, this Sunday. What does it mean? What to expect? And are you up to speed? And could it be a big market mover? So we're going to talk about that. And then the global bond market just had its worst sell-off in 13 years since 2003. Why is that? And what does it mean? And then finally, we have a question from a listener who has an interesting question about real estate in Costa Rica. Let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the NASDAQ down 30 points, the S&P down about 11.5, and the Dow down about 55 points. Small caps were hit the most. You had gold up, the dollar down. You had oil up a little bit, which was kind of surprising after the OPEC meeting didn't go so hot. Certainly the market fell on Friday because of that, but rebounded a little bit today. So, you know, we're still hovering around the mid-40s range for oil, closed at 46.84 today. It's really interesting. It's kind of been stuck here, and where it goes is hard to say, but it's certainly going to break down or up sooner rather than later, I think. So those are our discussion points today, but let's dive into when to invest in real estate and when not to. If you have a question about any of this or any other topic, you know, don't hesitate to pick up the phone. It's probably your smartphone these days, but give us a call, 800-557-5461. That's that's our office line. 8899-CHART is our number, 8899-24278. That is the number you get through to ask your question on this hour and try to do it sooner rather than later. Now, you know, real estate investing often boils down to analyzing the market, determine whether interest rates are going up, whether the economy is improving, whether that's favorable or not, and that's certainly a good place to start. You know, I get a lot of calls from clients and just listeners and asking questions about is it a good time to invest in real estate. And, you know, I'm going to say at this point, probably it's not the greatest time. I'll say that. But that doesn't mean it's not the time for you. And I could say the same thing if I said, oh, this is a great time to invest in real estate. But that doesn't necessarily mean it is the right time for you. So what are some signs that it's time to wait? Okay, what are some signs that it's time to wait and not invest in real estate at this time? Well, first is, your portfolio is already heavy in real estate. You know, we talk about this to clients all the time. You need to build a diversified portfolio. I talked at the top of the hour about not chasing certain returns in certain asset classes. And people get over-leveraged to one asset class. And real estate is very easy to do that too, because you just need, you know, 10-20% down, get the loan from the bank, and all of a sudden you have a real estate investment. And becomes fairly easy. Especially if you've done it once or twice. So if you're overly exposed, meaning I would say over 30% of your net worth is in real estate, you probably have too much real estate. All right. Then second, you have no desire to become a landlord or a property manager. That's a good sign. It's probably time to wait. You know, investing in real estate is, especially directly into an individual property, can be a headache. It's in ways, it can be a part-time job, especially if you have multiple properties. So be aware of that. Okay. Then maybe you invest in a REIT instead if you don't want to become a landlord. That's certainly a possibility. I would argue isn't the best time right now, but there are certain areas of the REIT market that could be good. And now what are some signs that it's time to invest? That even though, you know, this might not be the greatest time because interest rates are going up and, you know, the economy is still somewhat shaky. What are some signs that you're ready, Well, one is you're debt-free and you have an emergency fund in place. That means you're well-equipped to find a good property that's undervalued and put your money to work. Maybe you have to rehab it because you found a great deal, but it needs some rehab to rent out. That's a perfect situation for you to start looking. All right. Then second, generally, you've genuinely found a great deal. And that's really, in any market, that is what you're looking for, right? If you've looked at a properties for any length of time, you probably start figuring out what separates, you know, the so-so deals from the great properties. And if you are, you work with a good agent who understands the market and understands and has invested before, then you'll make a better decision. You'll be able to find a great deal, you know, and that's what we kind of help clients with. And that's really ultimately what matters the most. In any market, a great deal is a great deal. And then finally, you're planning to buy and hold the property. In this market, that's what you need to do. You need to be prepared. Investing in real estate isn't a get-rich-quick type of thing. It's you invest slowly over time, and you get great cash flow, and you pay down your loans, and you know you own the house free and clear, and suddenly you're doing great. And that's what real estate's about. It's not about flipping. Now we're open to your money questions right now. I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. Have you done your homework? There's much to learn, and thankfully there are many sources of knowledge. Visit our recommended book section on investtalk.com, and there you'll see a list of books that maybe you should be reading. Steve's book is there too, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. It's there on investtalk.com. You're listening to Invest Talk for Monday, November 28th. The secret to predicting the future is understanding the present. That's one of our talking points next time. 888-99-CHART is how to get through with your talking point right now.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Mike from Washington State. I'm 69 and retired and trying to look into more safer investments. So I'm looking into bonds. I listened to your program, and either Steve or Justin, you have mentioned the wisdom of not going out too far because of the conditions right now, years-wise, to buy bonds. So I'm thinking of doing a ladder from like 1 to 5 year laddering, small increments, hopefully like $5,000 minimum if I can find those. But I have questions about the meaning of the terms. One is that what's the difference between the coupon and the yield? And under coupon, they vary between a listed 3 to 5, whatever that means, with compared to a yield of 0.9 to 1.25. So I don't understand that. I would always hold to the bond to maturity. So if that affects that, then I don't have to worry. But I just would like to know what the yield is mainly. Excuse me, the dividend on the bond or the interest. Also, what does it mean that when the price varies from, I guess 100 is par, it varies from 100 to 104. It's usually above par. Would I be wise in sticking close to par, or does that matter that much when I'm going to hold it to maturity? Anyway, thank you very much for listening to this and helping me with this information on bonds. Look forward to listening to your program, as I've always done. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's a great question, and his strategy is very similar to what we employ at our balanced income program. And, you know, he's 69, and most of our clients in that program are close to or in retirement. And we ladder the bonds out. You know, we don't necessarily do 1 to 5, but sometimes it's 3 to 7. It just depends on the market. But his questions are very valid. And, you know, especially if you have done it before, it can get confusing. So the coupon is what the bond yield was when it was first issued, right? So, and bonds, they trade at par. They go to market, tend to go market at par, and par is 100. So say that the at that time it was yielding 4%, the coupon would be 4, right? 4%, that's the coupon. But when the bonds appreciate, right, say you pay more than 100, you're still getting that 4% coupon, but you're getting, you paid a higher price. So your yield is actually lower because it's only paying 4% based on 100 par, not on what you paid for it, right? So you're paying more than par, say 105. And so that yield based on 105 is lower than 4%. Now, if it was, if you, and that's called buying a bond at a premium. And in this market, maybe less so after the past couple weeks, but in this market, you tend to buy bonds at par, or no, sorry, above par at a premium because they were issued a while ago when interest rates were higher and now interest rates are lower, and therefore the bond prices appreciate. And that's how bond prices work. Interest rates go down, bond prices tend to go up, and vice versa. Okay? So you should be focused on the yield, not the coupon. The coupon doesn't really matter that much. It's if you're holding to maturity, you want to know what your yield is. And what we look at is yield to worst. And that includes any call options, put options, etc. Unique features of the bond that may make it even more complicated than a traditional bond. So sometimes you could buy the bond at a discount and say when it and discount is under par, under 100, and that means that 4% coupon is now higher. Your yield is going to be higher than 4% if you buy it at a discount. And sometimes you get those. There could be a downgrade by a major credit rating agency. Certainly that increases your risks of default, but sometimes they may be wrong, or it's just a short-term blip. Right, and you can buy it at a discount. We get that opportunity all the time to get good yields, or maybe just as interest rates continue to rise, you'll see more and more bonds trading at a discount. So, but generally, don't worry about it. I would worry more about the yield. Yield to worst is the main number you need to be considering if you're going to ladder bonds. Great question, and it's very similar to what we do for a lot of our clients. Now let's take a look at the economic news that's coming down the pipe over the next week or so. Now tomorrow we get a revision of the GDP figure. The consensus says it's going to tick up from 3% to 2.9 to 3%. And the biggest headwind to that is profits. We've had profits for corporations declined 5 of the last 6 quarters, and they were down 4.3% year on year in the second quarter. So whether that continues to reaccelerate will bode favorably towards the GDP figure for the third quarter. And Wednesday we have personal spending numbers that come out. And there's going to be decline most likely, or the drag will be from utilities, because we've had warmer than expected weather. But the consensus expects a 0.4% increase in incomes and a 0.5% increase in spending. So that should boost it. Thursday is the manufacturing ISM report. To me, that's the most important. And that really is most important because it's going to show a few things. It's the first export order figure that's come out post-election that will tell us whether the rise in the dollar is going to crimp economic activity, meaning exports mainly. So the consensus thinks it's going to be little change. The ISM report is 52. That's what they think it's going to be at. Under 50 is shrinkage. But if it's below 52, that would be a negative, and the market may not react positively to that. And then Friday is the jobs report. Consensus is 180,000 jobs. This doesn't really matter. It's probably one of the lowest important job reports in a while. And the main reason is because the market's already priced in a 90% chance that the Fed will raise interest rates in December. And I think this jobs report would have to be really bad for the Fed to not raise rates, okay? And this is more instructive on what is the pace of rate rises in 2017, right? And this might have an effect on what the Fed says in their December statement when they do raise rates, which I still think is likely unless we have a dramatic drop in the market and between now and then, which is certainly possible as you know this the Trump trade might unwind, and certainly the Italian referendum on Sunday could throw some cold water, I guess you could say, on this rally. Now, what's in it for insiders? You know, become an InvestTalk insider and find out. One thing, you get a copy of all of our webinars that we've done throughout the years. It's a whole library there. You can play anytime, and it's free. We never charge for any of the useful content as an InvestTalk insider. There's much, much more that you'll get as well to learn about how to invest, learn about how to manage your portfolio, and make good investment decisions. So to sign up, just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab.
Steve's next portfolio checkup date is tomorrow. He'll be in San Jose on November 29th. He schedules these visits with a limited number of our listeners on Skype, telephone, and in person. And if you'd like to reserve your own time with Steve, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Steve, this is Pete from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm a podcast listener. I'm just wondering what you think about a stock by the name of Gilead Sciences, G-I-L-D. It's a pharmaceutical that I would be interested in holding long-term. I'm just wondering what a good entry point would be. Thanks. I'll listen on the podcast.
Don't buy Gilead. I've probably had this question on the show more than any other stock over the past 2 years, and it's just been in a downtrend. When I know when to buy Gilead is when I stop getting calls on Gilead. Really, honestly, I'm not joking on that. It's literally been in a downtrend for the past 18 months or so, and I don't think it's going to stop until probably $50 or so. Now it's at 74. It's from a high of 125 or so. They're dependent on one drug that cures hepatitis C, and people are being cured of it, and they don't have a lot of other drugs that are going to pick up the slack. And just frankly, there's a lot of pressure on drug prices and they cost a lot. I mean, if you go back to any of the shows I've done over the past probably 18 months, I'm sure half of them will have a question on Gilead and been consistently negative on Gilead. So, no, Gilead's not cheap enough. I think right now its market cap is $98 billion. I think it's going to shrink by probably half that, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't even think about it until it gets below $50 a share. So that was Gilead Sciences. Now, Sunday is a big, big day, December 4th. And this is when the Italian people will be called to vote on a constitutional referendum. And this is a very interesting one because it changes a lot of things, or could change a lot of structures of the Constitution. These are really amendments to the current Constitution. Imagine if we did that here in America. We amended the Constitution by calling a countrywide referendum. Well, that's what Italy's doing. And it involves a bunch of reforms, including reducing the powers of the Senate, all these, I don't want to go into it. But really, these are supported by current Prime Minister Renzi, and he supported these reforms, but unfortunately for Italy, this is not supported by the opposition. And the polls right now are saying that this will be defeated. They're up about 5%. And what he says is that if this gets defeated, he will step down. Okay, and a no vote is interpreted as very anti-establishment because Renzi is the establishment. This is what he's supporting, and it's also anti-euro. And the five-star movement within Italy will probably call for an election, and they're the kind of the opposition, the party, the biggest opposition party that is anti-euro, anti-establishment. And this is the political environment that we're in. They're going to probably call for a referendum to leave the euro within a few years. And this can be big consequences. It could throw Italy into a political crisis. It potentially could be the death knell of the euro. You already had Brexit. And if you have Italy headed for the door, or looking like it's heading for the door, are they going to be able to recapitalize Italian banks? Are people going to throw their money at Italian banks when they're potentially going to leave the euro? And how does that affect their economy? A lot of uncertainty there. And Italian banks are the most at-risk type of banks in Europe. And you've already had huge declines in certain banks in Europe, like Banca Monte dei Paschi. I don't know if I said that right. There is, you know, one of the main reasons for the worry here is because there's already been a big sell-off. Bond investors are already taking a big hit on European or Italian banks, and this could exacerbate it even more. And I don't think a lot of people are talking about it. It's not being discussed enough, I don't think. So be aware of this, that this, I think, is a bigger deal than Trump. And it's just a continuation of Brexit. Because, you know, if you look at the political establishments around the world, Europe is the most fragile. Because they have a lot of banking issues. They have a lot of political infighting within countries within Europe. The central bank and a lot of different powers that are, there's no clear, concise way forward. And that's why eventually I do think the euro will disintegrate, the euro block, maybe not the currency itself, but the European Union will eventually disintegrate. And this could be the start of it. Let's go to Jay in Fremont. How are you doing, Jay?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. I had a quick question on Teva Pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. T-E-V-A.
Yep.
It has fallen down a lot, and I want to know if it is a good price to get in. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Looking at Teva Pharmaceuticals, it has certainly fallen a lot. It's a high of about $72 and change in middle of last year, and now it's at $38.15. It's certainly into a lot of support here. I'll tell you that, Jay. So technically, this looks like a pretty good level. I'm not gonna lie to you. Let me look at the fundamentals, though. You know, the fundamentals are okay. I don't love it. I don't think it's super undervalued. But I actually think this is a good place to get into. And I like it because it's generic pharmaceuticals. Good cash flow. I'm going to give it a thumbs up. I like Teva at these levels, not as without risk, but I do like it here at this good support. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. We've got another segment left with your time to call. We only have about 7 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call, do it ASAP. 888-99-CHART is our number. It's 888-992-4278. It's our anytime listener line, and we're here for you.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, how's it going? Yeah, I'm an active listener of your guys' show. It's awesome here. I guess my question was basically on the real estate side of investing. I'm coming across my last year of college, and I was just looking into different sort of options on, how to, build wealth and income here. And I'm 23 years old, and I was doing a lot of research and thinking about, as far as looking into real estate, as far as having something on the side with the regular, 9-to-5 job here. Specifically, I was looking into, rental properties, building cash flow on different sort of rental properties, whether it be a multifamily or single family, different sort of varieties of it. My question was, is it a feasible thing at my age, and also, different sort of advice on how to build capital, I guess, especially while coming out of school and, just that informal, run through on how to get, the feet running, basically. Thank you, guys. Your show is awesome. I'm excited to hear from you guys. Thank you. All right.
Great question. And yes, it's feasible if you have the money to do it. you know, building capital is it takes money to make money, right? So I've seen people who are coming out of college, they've saved enough money to put 20% down on a property, probably 30. You have to, if you're looking at investing, you probably put 30% down, possibly to invest. So you need to have at least 20% down to do so. So yes, that is feasible. There's a few things you need to make sure that you understand before jumping into the real estate investing game. It is not a get-rich-quick type of investment. It is flipping is certainly something that certain people are good at and successful at. It helps a lot if the market's going up. But for most people, especially early on in their investing game, real estate investing game, you want to start slow. You want cash flow properties, and not just cash flowing a little bit. It needs to have a cap rate of higher than whatever your interest rate is. Okay, think about that. It needs to have a cap rate higher than your interest rate. So if right now on a best property you're probably getting 4.5%, you need to have at least a cap rate of 5%, and I would say much higher than that. I would only invest in anything that has a cap rate of close to 10%. And why? Well, it gives me a buffer. Because while rents may be X today, it's not guaranteed that rents are going to rise in the future. Especially if you hit a recession, rents could go down. You might have vacancies for months at a time. You might have to fix things. And suddenly the cap rate goes down for that year because of the cost of fixing things. There are a lot of variables that go into owning and renting out a property. It is not as simple and straightforward as a lot of people like to make it out to be. So you have to be mentally prepared for the potential risk and financially prepared for the potential risk. You need to have a buffer. Just because you have 20% down doesn't mean you're ready to go. You need to have 20% down plus a buffer in case there's electrical problems, there's a flood, you have vacancies, your tenant just stops paying. That's happened plenty of times to many investors where the tenant is just sitting there. They're not paying you. You can't get them out. In California, it takes 6 months to get them out. Other states, you know, might be different. So you have to go in with your eyes wide open. Make sure you're working with a strong professional who's done this before, who's invested before, understands the market. But also understands that there are cycles. Right? And I think most of you out there would agree we're near the end of the cycle. Now, the cycle could last another 2 years, but you know we've been in this cycle, especially the stock market cycle, we'll call it 7 years, 8 years. The real estate cycle, you know, kind of bottomed in 2010, so 6 years. All right. So just, yes, you could be ready, but you got to check a lot of boxes before you jump in. Now our time is up for this hour. Steve will be in San Jose for individual retirement reviews tomorrow. That's November 29th. I think he has 5 appointments, and I think he has 1 meeting left open. So if you'd like to meet with him, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve and I, along with everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today, and we'll be here tomorrow. So why don't you join us again then?
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.